Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. International Women's Day was observed this week, one day after St. Louis Democrats voted to nominate a candidate for mayor who was widely expected to become the city's first female mayor. It got us to thinking about the role of women in our local, regional, and state politics. Who better to do that than St. Louis Public Radio political reporter Jo Manis? She takes us behind the headlines, past, present, and perhaps future, on the role of women in politics. Jo, great to have you back again.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, it's kind of sobering, you know. Actually, most of the women you're going to name, I actually knew them.
So yeah, well, they were strong women, and they really made their mark in city politics. And however way you want to put it, Lyda Crewson is a candidate and probably the next mayor because women who came before kind of paved the way.
Yes, and I think it was interesting in that Crewson, somewhat like Clinton, from the fact that she didn't emphasize it that much because it's obvious. I mean, it used to be it was a big deal. It's still a big deal, and some of this may be strategic, but women candidates are less likely to emphasize it.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you mentioned Hillary Clinton because there was a moment the other night as she was accepting victory, or during the evening in which she accepted victory, in which she sounded a little bit to me like Hillary Clinton. Let's play the clip that I'm referring to, then we can discuss it, okay?
Several months ago, my campaign team, they took me aside and they said, "We got to talk to you about something." I was like, "Oh no, what is it? You know, what did I say? What did I do? Oh, we got to talk to you about something. It's very serious." "What is it?" "It's your purse. You've got to get rid of it." I said, "Well, how can I get rid of my purse? I mean, where am I going to put my stuff? Where am I going to put my lipstick? Where am I going to put my phone, my pen, and my other stuff? I said, why do I have to get rid of my purse?" Well, they said, "You know, it's really doesn't look mayoral to carry a purse." So I thought about this for a few seconds, and then I said, "Well, as soon as we have a woman mayor, it'll look very mayoral."
Yes. Ida.
Now, I didn't run to be the first woman mayor. But if you help me across the finish line on April the 4th, every little girl and every young woman will know that they too can serve our city and be leaders for tomorrow.
That's Lyda Crewson, the Democratic nominee for mayor of the city of St. Louis. Did she remind you of Hillary Clinton, with particularly at the end there?
A little bit. It's kind of funny because I was there. Yeah. Our purses are almost identical. So when she put that up there, I got a big kick out of that. But yes, and one of the interesting, very noteworthy things about Tuesday's election is that she narrowly defeated the other woman running for mayor, city treasurer Tashara Jones. Yeah. I mean, it's less than 900 votes. But this is out of a large field, but there were five major candidates. Two were women, and it was the two women who ended up 1 and 2, not the guys.
Well, while we're here, you have some interesting insight into a situation that kind of developed and then petered out overnight with State Representative Bruce Franks indicating that he was going to run as a write-in candidate for mayor in April. And then today, I guess it was today or
this morning,
he backed out. What's going on here?
Okay, well, there's different various things, and I have to be careful here, but I don't want to. But here's what I had been told. I'm sure there were a number of things that entered into his decision. It's hard to run it as a write-in, and he points to the fact that if he had won, his legislative seat might be vacant for a year and a half, but what I was hearing from a number of activists this morning was that another factor was that there was a number of progressive supporters of Jones, women, who told him, "Don't do this." I mean, Tashara Jones had made a point on Tuesday night of jabbing at the three African-American rivals who she believes actually cost her the victory.
It was the ego comment.
Yeah, the ego comment. Yep. And I think that from what I was hearing this morning, that some of her supporters anyway, and these are black and white women, were like, wait a minute, we are not going to rob Crewson of being the first woman if that's, you know, if that's the fact, in order for a guy. I mean, so that it wasn't a racial thing. All of a sudden, it was a gender thing. I mean, that's what I was hearing. I am not saying this is accurate, but I'm just telling you this is what I was hearing. And in some ways, it made sense, because when I first heard about this last night, that was the one thing that went past my mind. I guess because I'm a woman, just thinking, well, how are all the women activists who were involved in both campaigns going to greet this? And Jones put out a statement. She had texted it to me about an hour and a half ago, and she didn't say that, but came close to saying that this wasn't about personalities, that a writing candidacy is difficult, and that she loves Bruce Franks because he had supported her, but she was saying this is not the time or the place. And so I thought that was intriguing, that she was like, and I am told that her supporters and perhaps her had made that very clear to him this morning.
It's very interesting to think that gender might, if this all is played out the way that you say, that gender would be more important than race in the city of St. Louis.
In this particular instance, it may have played a role.
Yeah. Lyda Crewson has some work cut out for her as she runs and as she becomes mayor, because clearly, the analysis of the election results, showed that she won the white vote in a very specific area of the city. But the city is majority black, and she's going to have to work with the black constituents as well.
Oh yeah, and I think she's aware. Well, she made that clear on Tuesday night. She's aware of it. And as I had mentioned earlier this week, one of the noteworthy things to me, just as an old reporter, was that her victory party had white and black supporters, mm-hmm. and Jones's party had white and black supporters. So while there was a racial component to this contest, that the supporters is a bit more diverse. And that's something you wouldn't have seen even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so while Crewson definitely has to work on this, definitely, I mean, she has talked about some of this, but it will play. I mean, she's going to have to work because the North Side wards and other parts of the city, because there's a substantial part of the South St. Louis that is now majority African-American, that there are a lot of people, a lot of neighborhoods that need work, and she's going to have to focus on that. But bringing this back to the Franks thing is that Representative Franks cited this, saying that while he considered Crewson a nice lady, those were his exact words, he just thought that he could have a broader constituency. But again, all of a sudden, behind the scenes, apparently, what I'm hearing is that a number of women, white and black, said, don't do it. The timing's off.
Well, as long as you've called yourself an old reporter, and I would never dare say that, Joe.
Hey, look, I have friends who didn't make it this far, so I'm not apologetic.
Well, looking back, who are some of the women that come to mind that, kind of paved the way for Lyda Crewson and for others of the modern era who are successful in politics locally?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of women, of course, who are well-known, but some who weren't. In fact, among the aldermen, I think one, she's now retired and lives in St. Charles, is former Alderman Geraldine Osborne.
Oh, yes.
Who was extremely influential in city issues, city legislation for decades. Mm-hmm. But unless you covered City Hall or were active covering politics, you might not have known that. And, I mean, she was probably one of the most powerful aldermen in the Board of Aldermen for a long time. And she was a woman, especially when she started, she was at a time when there was very few.
I was going to say, but the Aldermanic Board is a place where some pretty important women got started.
Yes, correct. And, of course, you know, for Crewson. Yeah. And, of course, you have, Comptroller Darlene Green, who is not an alderman, but Comptroller Darlene Green, who will hold the record, at least for right now, of being the longest-serving comptroller in St. Louis history. Mm-hmm. She's a woman.
Right.
And in fact, you know, she was like, she's the second woman to hold that job. Mm-hmm. The first one was Rita Hoogasian, who actually ran the place behind the scenes among some male comptrollers. I mean, there's people like that whose names you would never know, who people don't think about. But women played a stronger role in St. Louis politics than some people think.
Right. I would also put Jennifer Joyce in that category. Not a politician per se, but she did have to be elected to serve, and she served for a record number of years
yes,
as well.
Yes, and her predecessor, D. Joyce Hayes. So when you think about it, I mean, you think about it, a woman ran the circuit attorney's office, and now we have another woman. It's been decades since a man has held that office.
And that's at the heart of city politics. But there are some other names that are well-known and well-known statewide and who really made inroads. The first one that comes to mind – I hesitate to bring it up now because we have to take a break in about a minute. But the first name that comes to my mind is Harriet Woods. Would you agree that's at the top of the list?
Yes.
Former
Harriet
Lieutenant
Woods,
Governor, yes. Former state senator.
Exactly. She was the first woman elected to statewide office in Missouri. As I said, she was not the first woman to serve. That was Margaret Kelly, who was appointed state auditor by Kit Bond after he became governor. So she was the first woman to hold it. But, Harriet Woods was the first one to be elected to it. And Harriet made two bids for the U.S. Senate. Didn't make it, but then later became the national head of the National Women's Political Caucus. And was a major national political player for a long, long time.
And her career got started, as I understand it, and I do have to take this break momentarily, because she was heard complaints in her neighborhood about a manhole cover that made a lot of noise when cars drove over it. It got her active in trying to solve this problem. Ultimately, it led to her time in politics.
Yeah, because she had three sons, and she said they were little, and it would wake them up from their naps.
All right. Well, I have to take that break. Joe Mattis, my guest. We're talking about women in politics. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Joe Mattis. And Joe, I saw your eyes light up and you heard the story about the auditor's, the reaction to the auditor's concerns about bonuses at Mizzou.
Yeah, I mean, without taking a stand on the bonuses, the auditor is a woman, Nicole Galloway, who's a Democrat who will likely be running for election in 2018. That will be her first time running for office because she was appointed after Auditor Tom Schweik killed himself a couple years ago during his bid for governor. But, and so Galloway's trying to she is kind of taking the path of several previous auditors, several of whom have been women in the last 20 years, including McCaskill. Claire McCaskill is now the U.S. Senator, of trying to make the auditor's office look less partisan. And this goes all the way back to Margaret Kelly, who I mentioned was appointed back in the 80s. While Margaret did run for re-election a number of times and was elected, and she made a bid for governor in 96, did not win. But she had tried to make the office, while it was partisan, but tried to emphasize that she was nonpartisan and investigating both parties. And I think Galloway is taking the same tack. I mean, this audit of the University of Missouri system, I mean, you've got Republicans closely looking at this. You got the governor who was pointing out this stuff. And so in some ways, they're on Galloway's side on this. But they're being careful because she's a Democrat that they hope to knock off in 18 months.
Yeah, well, and we should point out that the auditor's job is one that oftentimes leads to higher office.
Yes. I mean, going back to Kit Bond. I mean, right. He became governor. John Ashcroft, who was appointed auditor, did not win re-election as auditor. This goes back. This is way back. But then he ended up having a string of other offices that he did win. But, the auditor's job has often been one that's been a springboard, and partly because they can deal with these tough topics. And, of course, McCaskill was definitely her springboard, although she ran for governor in the middle. But that was definitely her springboard for running for the U.S. Senate.
You know, another name that comes to mind that certainly had impact not only here but across the country is the late Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, I knew her quite well. And as a reporter, one of the things I liked about her is that she always talked to you. I had her cell phone number the last 15 years, and she'd call you back. She called me with tips a few times. I mean, Phyllis Schlafly is an interesting figure because she was a very prominent woman conservative, really strongly believed what she believed, founded the Eagle Forum in the 70s as she was campaigning against the proposed Equal Rights Amendment. You had some of her critics, and one of them was Harriet Woods. She and Harriet were kind of contemporaries, and they often had even done a few
debates
together. And but what they were saying, well, Phyllis preaches one thing, but lives another because she's become a powerhouse and was a very strong woman. But she did passionately believe what she believed. She was very not keen on immigration. She was definitely felt that the U.S. wasn't doing enough for our national security issues, especially in the military. But she was, I think, people don't realize what an influential figure she was in the conservative movement. And she she's a native St. Louisan. I mean, she lived in Alton for several decades while she was married, but she was born and raised on this side of the river and came back after her husband died. I ended up regrettably, but I was lucky. I had one of the last major interviews with her in July.
Yeah. I remember her quite clearly from the ERA days and beyond. I always found her very intimidating to interview. I mean, she was very prepared, and if you weren't, she'd eat you alive.
Oh, yes. I mean, she was. But I guess it was, as again, the thing I liked about her was Phyllis Schlafly was real. She was what she was. And, yeah, she could be intimidating, but she wasn't. I never found her rude, per se. As I said, I mean, I remember one of my first interviews with her was in the early 90s. But like if I'd show up at an event, because often she would have these little gatherings out in West County, and I'd often try to show up there if I didn't have something else going on, see what she was talking about. And she made a point of, you know, either saying, oh, well, this is when I worked for the Post-Dispatch, or later for the Beacon. She'd say, oh, Joe's here from the Post-Dispatch or from St. Louis Beacon or from St. Louis Public Radio. And she valued the press. You know, she recognized the importance of getting her message out. And as I said, during her prime, she was the one person that if Republicans were running for president, they would definitely court her. I remember she had a big event at the airport Hilton one time, and there all these major GOP presidential candidates were flying in, giving little appearances, talking to her in the hall, and then leaving. I remember that clearly because I was there and grabbing them all in the hall.
Remember her funeral?
Yes, yeah. I mean Donald Trump.
Exactly.
You know, I mean even in death, she had a powerful influence. And I mean, I did a story that ran in December. I mean, this is unfortunate from a family perspective, where I interviewed several of her children because there is this family split over her legacy. But there's no question that Phyllis Schlafly was a major figure and deserves to be recognized as a major woman figure.
I wonder what sort of credit an Ann Wagner would give Phyllis Schlafly.
Well, I think Ann Wagner, who I've known for a long time.
Second District Congresswoman.
Yes, Second District Congresswoman, former chairman of the Missouri Republican Party, was the co-chair of the National Republican Party. I think that I'm pretty confident that Ann Wagner would give Phyllis Schlafly credit for helping to elevate the rise of women within the Republican ranks. I mean, think about it. In Missouri right now, the two women members of Congress in the House are both Republicans, Ann Wagner and Vicky Hartzler, who's on the other side of the state. and both of whom are being talked about as potential contenders to take on U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill in 2018.
Another name I'd like to mention is, I know you knew her, is Sue Scheer.
Yeah.
Former state representative and has the facility out at UMSL named it. It's a Sue Scheer Institute named after her. Very effective legislator.
Yes, she was. Now, she also did some debates with Phyllis Schlafly over the Equal Rights Amendment because Sue Scheer was an unabashed progressive Democrat. But she was inspiring to many women, really encouraged a lot of the women who are in the state house now. If they're of a certain age, they had been either recruited or knew Sue Scheer when they were young. Mm-hmm. I mean, she did a lot to try to get more women to run for office, especially Democratic women. And she and Harriet mm-hmm. Woods were very much worked together on that right. sort of thing.
Who do you think was the inspiration for some of the African-American politicians that we're hearing so much about today? Maria Chappelle Nadal, Jamila Nasheed, just to name a couple. You mentioned, of course, Char Jones. You mentioned Darlene Green earlier. Is there anyone we can point to who might have been an inspiration to them?
Well, in some ways, I'm not sure. I think one of the key players behind the scene players who we haven't mentioned is Pearlie Evans, who recently died.
She was chief of staff to Bill Clay, the congressman, first Bill Clay.
Yeah, Bill Clay Sr. for a long, long time. Pearlie Evans, who I knew, and very charming, very powerful woman, very sharp, and very strategic. And again, she was one of those behind-the-scene players who knew where the bodies were buried mm-hmm. and what should be done, and was a very strong and helping Bill Clay, who was the first African-American congressman from Missouri and served in that job for a long time. But she really helped him so that he could focus on a lot of the broader national issues that he wanted to focus on while Evans took care of the political operation here at home. And for decades, I mean, if you were black or white and you were running for office locally in the city or you needed to get help politically, you went to Pearlie Evans. So I would not doubt that Pearlie Evans was somewhat of an inspiration to many women, black and white, who ended up running for office.
And even though she was pretty much behind the scenes, people knew her. And she was fiercely loyal to Bill Clay.
Yes, and she was an intimidating figure. She was somewhat tall.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I said, I really enjoyed sitting around and talking to her sometimes. Yeah. And very charming, very sharp, and took no prisoners, and was, I would say, probably inspiration for a lot of women locally, black and white, who ended up running for office. She's one of those people you could point to.
Yeah, behind the scenes, and we can't get into this, but there's another woman behind the scenes who was very influential, Joyce Abusi, whose name may not be well known to many, but it certainly is in the political world.
Oh, yeah, and Joyce is still active. I mean, she's not that old. She's younger than me. And, Joyce was Dick Gebhardt's national political director for a number of years, had a polling operation in her own right, has done a lot of fundraising for St. Jude's Hospital, which is a love of hers, and still is very influential. She was a major money-raising operative for Hillary Clinton in this last election as far as helping get money raised and kind of doing things for that.
Only 45 seconds left. What's the future of for Tashara Jones?
Well, I think that, she's definitely, I mean, you're going to be hearing a lot about Tashara Jones over the next 10 or 20 years. She's only 42. She's very, as I said, she's so far been very successful as city treasurer. And you'll be hearing a lot about her again.
I'm sure she learned a lot during this campaign. She's been around for a while, obviously, and still young, but she learned a lot, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, and this is one thing. This is for male or female.
Very quickly,
many of politicians who I've talked to over the years, they say that first big loss, they learn more from that than from their first big win.
Got to end it there. Joe Manis, thank you so much for helping us go behind the headlines. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.